What's cool about with the mustache, I can feel the bristles against the microphone.
That's great.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Autopod Decepticast. This is your bi-weekly podcast that delivers an episode-by-episode breakdown of the original G1 series. This is our episode number 134. Today we're going to be talking about The Core. That would be Transformers G1 Season 2, episode number 28. And I'm your host, Aaron, and the other day I was thinking about a spooky situation my co-hosts and I found each other in about 30 years ago. You see, my husband, Caleb, and I, we were planning a restful staycation in our New England home when out of nowhere, on a trip back from town, we swerved to avoid a cute little canine and we drove our car into a river.
I get it.
Upon returning home, we realized we didn't even remember how we got back in our own house, and retracing our steps, I accidentally discovered a time-altering desert universe, and Caleb came to realize that we didn't have any reflections in the mirror. Guess what? We're dead. Meanwhile, our piece of shit friend Jane sold her house to a pretentious artist and her real estate developer husband and their perfect goth daughter. And with the help of the interior designer slash amateur medium Otho, these fucks started to transform our house, Caleb's and mine, that is, into a fucking hackneyed art installation. What to do? We followed the instructions of the handbook for the recently deceased to link up with our caseworker, who informed us that if we want these interlopers out, we've got to scare them out. Well, we tried to create some ghastly haunting scenarios, but they all failed. The family couldn't even see Caleb and me. The one good thing that came out of it was the discovery that Lydia, the daughter, actually could see us, and we became fast friends and even came to see her as a sort of daughter to us. But despite our budding friendship, we wanted this family out, and despite our caseworker's advice, we contacted freelance bioexorcist Ryan Jett to help us. And I gotta say, Ryan's disgusting, perverted, and sexist mannerisms turned us off right away. So we turned away from him and left him in our nice fucking model. Caleb and I tried one final attempt at the ultimate scare with a Belafonte-inspired banana boat barn burner, but this tactic turned out to attract more intense interest from the artsy tart and her clout-chasing chums. Eventually, that freakish fuck Otho got his hand on our Hitchhiker's Guide to the Graveyard and used it to try and summon us for internet likes and retweets, and it worked. But also, he accidentally incanted an exorcism, so Caleb and I started to deteriorate before the eyes of the horrified houseguests. Of course, darling Lydia, who I forgot to mention is 17 years old, wanted to do whatever she could to save us. She summoned Ryan to help us out. He agreed to help, but only if Lydia, who is 17 years old, agreed to marry him. Ryan does his duty, saving Caleb and I, getting right to the matrimony, but then we save the day with Caleb guiding a starved sandworm's mouth hole over Ryan's body and sending him back to the world of the deceased. Well, Caleb and I, we decided to peacefully share our domicile with Lydia and her family, and she thrived, and we threw Belafonte-based dance parties every day.
How can you top that?
I mean, his music is so joyful.
Yes.
Beetlegeist.
I like how in all of these, there is a perfect character for Ryan.
I was going to do the nice fucking model line, but then you threw it in there. It's funny, though. We were just talking about this. I have a button from when I went to see Beetlejuice on Broadway.
Yeah?
How was last it? Year in New York. It was amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I got a $60 drink.
What kind of, was it like a
gin? I think it was 30. I think I got two of them. It was just gin on the rocks.
How did they...
It's where they get you.
Yeah. How did they interpret the scene of that dinner, the Deo scene?
It follows the movie pretty close, except that, like, Beetlejuice basically breaks the fourth wall constantly. So a lot of it's talking to the audience.
Makes sense.
It's great. It really works out well. I don't specifically remember how much different it was, but they made little changes. I don't have any examples for you just off the top of my head, but it was...
I wouldn't want you to infringe on their copyright and get a
Go suit. Watch it if it's still playing.
Okay, I'm sure it is.
Oh, strange and unusual.
Right, yeah. I'm sure that Broadway is alive and well right now during the pandemic.
That's right.
You must have seen that right before everything went down.
When it was last October.
Okay, never mind.
It was right after we went to TFCon DC. Wes and I flew to New York.
You guys need to provide an update. Friend of the show, Skeeter, gifted us with access to CBS.
Yep.
So that you guys could watch Picard.
Yep.
Because you didn't have access to CBS. What is it called? CBS?
Access. All Access or something like that.
CBS After Dark, it's called.
Oh, wow. It's that kind of Star Trek series. How was it?
I liked it very much.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a great deal. I didn't finish it in time to do that episode with Caleb on, what was it, Unfunny Nerd Tangent that did it? But yeah, I hadn't finished the series yet. But yeah, I enjoyed it. And then I started watching Discovery, which I like as well. But, you know.
Picard's been greenlit for a second, mm-hmm. at least another season. I'm really curious what they're going to do with that, because this season, it had good closure. I don't like how they wrapped up the final episode. It seemed rushed and hurried, I liked it.
Yeah, I had to adjust my expectations for watching it, because it's not really Star Trek like you know it.
Yeah,
it's not a classic Star Trek style.
I'm not going to try not to ruin it, but the scene with Data and Picard on that final episode was probably the strongest part of that whole series. Is it Brent Spiner?
Yep.
Did a fantastic job, and Data's character was well written on this. It was pretty badass.
I also really enjoyed Jerry Ryan's characterization of Seven of Nine, the way she's kind of grown as a character. Yeah. I liked that a lot.
And Hugh was in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. I liked that very much.
These are mild spoilers.
Now give me one thing you didn't like about it.
I did not like... At the very end, there are certain sequences that are, I consider, slapped together and super rushed. But if I look at it in a context of a normal Star Trek episode, it fits. It's just that I think they could have paced that particular story arc a little better.
More slowly? Let it breathe?
Yeah, perhaps.
Like the last season of Game of Thrones?
Ugh. The last few episodes of Game of Thrones was very problematic. It started strong, and boy, it fell flat really fast.
And if you've seen neither of these series, this is incredibly boring.
I'm just trying to relate it to the pacing issue.
Well, hell, if you haven't seen anything that we're talking about, I'm sure it's boring.
What if you'd never watched Transformers, but for whatever reason you listened to this?
Well, then you deserve that. That's the conceit.
I can kind of relate to that.
True. Is it a good podcast, Caleb?
Yeah, it's a fantastic podcast. I think without ever seeing Transformers, our podcast still holds up very well.
It's the best.
Yeah.
So thanks again, Ernie. That was really good. That was really nice.
Yeah, thank you, Ernie. I watched all that. That was in March and April. That was at the very, very, very beginning of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And that was a nice way to break into a global pandemic, was watching Picard. So Ernie kind of helped me... kind of ease into where we are now.
If there's one Star Trek series that I want to watch and get into, it's Next Generation.
It's my favorite.
It's very good.
There are some real bad episodes, but it's overall my favorite.
Speaking of, some of the episodes are kind of ACOM-ish, and some of them are Toei. You know, it is what it is, but there's some, I mean... you just got to roll with it, and TNG is... was my favorite show growing up. I think people have time right now to watch it. They should. It's great. It's fucking awesome.
I can't remember if you discovered this, Caleb, but maybe it was on Twitter and I found it. Somebody had taken and edited a bunch of, what's the guy who plays number one?
Jonathan Frakes.
Okay. He used to host a show called it's an Unsolved Mysteries
Factor
kind
Fiction.
Of show.
Yeah,
is that what it was?
I love that show.
Somebody,
I've never
somebody,
seen the show.
But... edited together a montage of his segments of his intros
and
then slowed it down about
50%. Do you believe in the power of a curse? Yeah, it's beyond belief, fact or fiction.
If you're listening to podcasts, if you slow anyone down,
it's true.
They sound drunk.
It's just the things he was saying.
Yeah. Like, have you ever looked in your mom and dad's dresser drawers?
Did you see it?
Yeah. It's a long time ago I saw that, yeah. West and I watched that, the whole run of that show. It's great.
Ever gone mountain biking? What do you want to be when you grow up? What's the right tip? Have you called a plumber to your home lately? How superstitious are you? How much money would it take to make you spend a night in a cemetery? You display this as a trophy? Do you have a pet? You believe in the power of a curse? Did you have your hearing tested? Planning a trip soon? Can you remember the tallest man you've ever seen? You love to go wandering beneath the clear blue sky. Have you noticed what big stars real estate agents have become? Are you careful with your personal records? Does your computer ever seem to have a mind of its own? Have you ever visited the Chinatown section in a major city? Have you ever visited a flea market? Ever visited a truck stop? Did you ever have a job as a waiter? Have you noticed how many successful restaurants are theme-based these days?
The curse one's my favorite.
I like how a solid 50% of those are things that nobody's ever wondered.
I've seen people comment that someone commented that it's akin to just happening to sit next to a really drunk guy at a bar. And what I really imagine is it's probably what like Seibert's experience was hanging out with you at TFCon LA.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That was actually not Jonathan Frakes. That was Aaron at TFCon LA.
Hey, you like robots? What a great transition. Yep. Jet, what are you thinking? What are we drinking?
Hey!
Well, these look beautiful. And the glassware is superb. Have you used this glassware before?
I don't know. I don't know. I bought it a while ago specifically for the podcast. So this drink is the Core Sample Tequila Special, which is from page 129. Obviously, I altered the name. This is, you take 2 ponies of tequila. A pony is 1 ounce. The juice of 1 lime, 2 teaspoons sugar, or 1 tablespoon simple syrup, 2 dashes of orange bitters, stir contents inside a Collins glass with lots of small ice, fill with club soda, and no garnish except the crushed limes. But I decided to garnish it with hibiscus flower.
Excellent.
Because it was a suggestion by our friend Johnny Utah on Instagram.
Really?
Yeah, it was on that. It was on your post.
Yeah,
Caleb.
Yeah. That's fascinating. I'm really curious to try this because I just recently, you know, I have a bunch of hibiscus in my yard and I've been looking at ways to make it into tea or eat it. And so I'm looking forward to actually eating this hibiscus flower.
Well, you've gotten into foraging lately.
Yeah, you're kind of a man of the earth right now.
I have. And we will not to shut that down right now, but we're going to discuss that a little bit more in the next episode.
Oh, excellent.
Where we have insecticons eating trees.
Sure. Save it, Cup.
So, okay. But
well, let's cheers
I
on this. This looks beautiful. Yeah, thank you, Ryan.
Let's try this out. Refreshing.
Yeah, I thought
it's a winner.
It's not too hot. Like right now, it's been super hot lately, and now this is old man corner, and now it's going to be cool for the next week. But when I planned these out, it was going to be like refreshing summer drinks.
It's fine. It's August 2nd. It's unseasonably cool this week. I'll take it.
Hibiscus flower petal that I just ate doesn't really have a flavor, but it's an interesting texture in your mouth.
What you can do is there's certain ways to bring that flavor out, apparently. I haven't done it yet. If you want to do the tea, you don't really do the petals. You do something called a calyx. And the calyx is like this bud. There's a hard bud part after the petals fall off. And you take that and you can dry it or keep it on hand and you steep it.
I've had commercial hibiscus tea, but never done my own.
Certain hibiscus have a bigger flavor than others. What I want to do with the petals is I've heard that you can make a really good recipe, a vegan, and it's popular in Mexico, actually. They take hibiscus flowers and they boil them down and it makes a meat substitute for tacos. Hibiscus tacos. And I've heard that some people have said it's like the best taco they've ever had.
That sounds like so many hibiscus.
Yeah, it takes a lot. it takes a lot. But I have a lot right now. I have a lot of Rose of Sharon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then so I'm thinking about maybe picking those and trying to do that.
It's kind of exciting. I've for a while I've been into this 18th century cooking channel on YouTube, Townsend's and Son, and like they do a lot. The whole foraging thing is really interesting to me. I like to watch a lot of survival stuff of like how to do, you know, Stone Age building a hut or building a fire oven or like stuff like that. I don't know. I just find it interesting the way things were done prior, mostly hard. Is the way. But I've made like, you know, 18th century chicken wings and fried chicken and that mushroom sauce.
Yeah.
The mushroom ketchup. Yep. Yeah.
The thing I think is kind of exciting about it is I wonder how many really cool, unique, delicious flavor profiles are lost to history because we're so, I don't know if addicted is the right word, but connected to just processed foods and your choice, even though it feels like you've got all this choice in the grocery stores, you really don't. Well, and there could be, obviously many.
More to come on that on the next episode.
Yep, because, stay tuned.
A little preview for you to make sure you're hooked in for
I'm going to
the next 2 weeks.
Have the guys experience eating a couple of plants.
That we're going to trip balls.
So anyway, it'll be pretty interesting. Sweet. I'm learning a lot. I'm finding it. The foraging thing is, I'm not hardcore, but I'm dabbling in it, and it's fascinating.
Sweet.
Awesome.
I'm into it.
Quick update for our patrons. I think we might be shipping booty boxes next week, and since this podcast comes out in 3 weeks as we're recording, then you probably already have your booty boxes.
The listeners are going, nope, didn't show up yet.
I mean,
international listeners may be problematic,
I'll believe it when I see it.
So if you qualified for the booty box and you don't have it, be on the lookout for it. If you do have it, I hope you like it.
Or, in addition, we welcome new patrons.
Of course.
And if you would like, now that we actually have the booty boxes ready, please contribute, join our Patreon subscribers, get a booty box.
Get some shit.
It's
good
stuff.
You'll have
too.
The benefit of being able to get it sooner. Now, the wait won't be as long for you.
Yeah, pioneers.
Life is full of hardship.
Although it is like there is a like you have to be subscribed at that level for at least 6 months.
Right, but
they'll get it faster.
They'll get it faster.
And obviously, like totally, any of the people who get the booty boxes, if you want to put that up on social media, we would greatly appreciate it. That would be great.
And I've seen what we're sending out and really go to a lot of trouble to make it quality. So you will not be disappointed if you throw in some bones, contribute on Patreon. It's some really cool stuff.
Unless you just hate awesome shit.
Yeah, right. And of course, since there's not going to be a TFCon now until Baltimore in October of 2021, this is your chance to get some merch where you normally wouldn't get some merch. So I'd say the money that you were saving back for the cons, throw it at us.
Yeah.
We'll give you some good stuff.
That's Caleb, you're full of good ideas.
I am.
We have a shout out on iTunes.
Cool.
Is it me?
No, because it wouldn't be on iTunes.
That's right.
That's true.
I don't know how to use anything.
It's actually a re-review. Friend of the show, Combatiamus 217, had headlined the review with the statement, this is the previous review that they gave us, Ryan Jett must be stopped.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And Combatiamus has come back with a refreshed iTunes review.
Ryan Jett, please stop, Ryan Jett. I'm serious.
The headline is "Everything You Want from a Podcast." I don't know how I feel about this one.
Okay, good.
All right.
From Grandma's Given the Suck parentheses. What? Wrinkled, round, and ready to pound. Did we ever say that?
I don't
that?
Know. I said a lot of things.
What? To stripper cops, to Starscream, Megatron, and Nightbird three ways. Also don't remember that. This podcast covers it all. Great podcast for anyone looking to laugh and do quality Transformers information. You guys should do a collection video or a top 10 fave Transformers figures. That would be almost as awesome as never hearing Ryan speak again.
Ooh, wicked one.
Somebody can't wait until you guys do the Bay films.
I'm telling you, this is someone who is going to kill us.
I'd say by the time we get to the Bay films, hopefully I am dead at that point.
Ryan, I feel like this person must know you.
God, what if it's my girlfriend?
To call you out so specifically so many times in a row feels a little suspect, and now I feel like it's a goddamn Scooby-Doo mystery to figure out who this is.
Sounds like Ryan's got an admirer.
Or an assassin.
But it's also paradoxical that Ryan is getting picked on because everything this person seems to like about the show are all Ryan's direct influence.
Yeah, it's complicated.
That's the Facebook status.
All the pervert shit is Ryan. Yeah.
I'm a nice boy. I'm sorry.
I like it. They get it. This listener... When a
listener dials in on the creepier stuff from our podcast, I always feel a little way about it.
I didn't mean to turn you guys on. I'm sorry.
That means you, Robinus.
I think it's time to get some of that Jesus in our lives.
No, I don't think so.
Should they hold their breath on the Bay film stuff?
Yeah. No, don't. They shouldn't hold their breath because they'll die of lack of oxygen.
I could see some Bay film one-offs, like one and done things. Nothing like this. God
damn it. Man, I don't know. Maybe.
Well, you'll just have to replace me with Pizza Toss and Mike.
Ah, that'll be a great.
If you want to hear some Bay stuff, More Than Meets the Pod did a few episodes where they watched them and talked about it. Not in our future, anytime soon, at least.
Right. You can just keep enjoying the wrinkled sucks. we'll get more of that
it
going.
Sounds like fan fiction. I don't know if that's directly lifted.
I'm pretty sure we did talk about Caleb's 100-year-old aunt purchasing a vibrator.
It sounds on brand.
I guess I forgot to write a last episode recap.
Sweet. You're getting good. It
doesn't matter.
I feel like you're slowly...
Listen, do you want an intro? Do you want a recap? Apart. Do you want a decent moderation of the show? You pick two of three, and that's what you're going to
get. You want it fast, you want it cheap, you want it good.
So for now, let's get into episode 28, The Core, written by Dennis Marks and animated by five-time World Hacky Sack Champions, ACOM.
I got it. This one was a brutal one.
Good times.
Normally, I watch these like 2 to 3 times, one for notes and one just for watching it and stuff like that. I watched this one 1.25 times.
I watched it today.
Can't handle
it. I rage quit the second time.
I watched it this morning while I was dragging out stuff for the garage sale I had at my house.
It's great.
That's about the effort you probably should have put into it. We open on an idyllic outdoor scene. A crystal blue river cuts through the mountains and forest. We follow this stream as we hear its serene, soft, bubbling sounds of streaming water, and we follow it down a waterfall into a natural cave filled with evil technological contraptions.
This isn't the worst ACOM animation, but it's still like, well, I got hit with a bucket of shit, but I didn't get it in my mouth.
One thing ACOM has going for it is that the animation is actually smoother. They animate at a higher frame rate than
that's
Toei.
As may be, but they don't do... It doesn't matter because it's so... Like, anytime anything is in motion, it doesn't matter how smooth the animation is because it's so bad up against the background.
Everything looks like it's made of rubber. It's like...
I have this note later when Laserbeak shows up, but like anytime anything's flying or moving in any way, it's just, and like, oh, we'll get there, but it's when the Autobots go up the hill, it's just like, burp, meow. Yeah.
Nothing is super dynamic. And when they try to do really more progressive action sequences, they execute it in a way as if a high schooler had drawn it out.
Is ACOM, I mean, we could research it. Maybe ACOM is like subbing out to like,
a junior high?
Like Korean high schoolers.
I mean, they're probably involved.
Good for
somehow.
Them.
They got to make some money.
I mean, it's good then.
The Constructicons are fucking drilling into the earth, and it seems they've gone too far. The rock is fractured. Stop the drill before everything explodes.
I am shocked that based on how stupid this plot is, that they took the time to even bother to include a coolant of water in the drill.
And I will say, that is... I like that they thought of that because
it's interesting.
It's also realistic.
And yeah, important. That's the weird part. It's so realistic.
Water is like this kind of drilling. Because I mean, my dad in the shop, he does a lot of drilling, and there's times when he's been drilling that we have to like, we add like a certain kind of oil to it just to cool it down.
Well, like when you cut ceramics, like the saw that you use has mm-hmm. a like water back, like
yeah.
shooting on it.
So yeah, kudos to them for actually taking that into consideration. Odd that they did.
Yeah.
Well, they use it as a little ahead of ourselves. They use it as the impetus for the Autobots discovering that there's something
sure.
weird going
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Between bickering over who felt the scene was unstable to begin with and the urgent need to seal off this impending disaster, we've got kind of a panicky situation here.
Yeah. Yeah. We got the fucking long haul.
He devises a chemical compound that...
Well, that's Mixmaster.
Well, Mixmaster mixes it up and spreads it into the cracks, and then the rest of the guys use their lasers to, I guess, cure the compound.
It's funny, because Longhaul says, load and unload, that's the story of my life. Really nailing down that I'm a bitch part of his personality. and then I do like the sound their lasers make when they're curing Mixmaster's concoction. It'll be here in a second. It's like that pew, pew. And I don't understand. The Constructicons and Megatron both say they could have been blown to oblivion, but like how though? Like fracturing rock isn't explosive.
Oh, okay. But there's a lot of things here that are fucking whack.
I mean,
the drill bit alone.
Well, we'll get to it. I keep getting ahead of us, but like, there's no way this could fracture the Earth. Like, that's just stupid.
No way that they could drill to the center of the Earth.
Well, yeah, and that's another thing I have in my notes later. This drill would be 4,000 miles in the sky.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there's what you do when you do actually when you do deep drilling, you have to continue to add segments as you drill down. Like, it's not just you're not going to just have a single piece. As it drills and you add a new piece and it goes down, you add a new piece and it goes down.
I have some fun things about 4,000 miles tall.
Good.
Too bad it's irrelevant based on the information that Caleb just...
Still, that's a lie.
I got something that's 4,000 miles long. Oh.
Wow. It's the length of the Amazon River. It's twice as long as the Oregon Trail. It's 4.5 quadrillion times Danny DeVito's height.
Should we start measuring things in DeVitos?
How many DeVitos are you, Ryan?
I don't know, 1.5.
He's short. He's a short. He's under 5 feet.
Yeah, I think he's 4 foot something.
Where were we? Megatron and Starscream show up on the scene. Megatron berates Scavenger for not detecting the flaws in the rock before starting the project and sends him off to get his geologic analyzer circuits.
Like a typical soup would do.
Mm-hmm. The way that Megatron puts his hand on Starscream's shoulder here is very weird.
He puts it on top of the pylon.
Those spin
or
things?
Whatever.
I kind
of
like that. Yeah.
It seems really strange. It makes me feel weird.
I like
didn't even
it.
Notice
that. Yeah, that's pretty... That guy screenshot that guy. Put that out there.
Starscream breaks down the plan really quickly. We're tapping the Earth's core, in case you didn't figure that out. Starscream is worried about the danger of such a plan because the Earth is a boulder, and like all boulders, it can shatter and kill all of them in the process.
Yeah, that's science. just science right there.
But Megatron takes Starscream to the surface to explain the plan further. He walks through a holographic mountain and reveals a hidden space bridge that the Decepticons will use to hightail to Cybertron if their plan proves to be impaired.
And you skipped over the part where Megatron says this is the richest energy in the galaxy, is at the Earth's core.
Oh, yeah. And they forgot about the sun existing?
The sun or any other planet that has a core. Like, I'm sure Jupiter's gravitational field, like the pressure at the core of Jupiter is much more powerful than the Earth molten core of just nickel and iron.
Let's presume that it is a good idea to tap the Earth's core. They've got all the infrastructure here to do that, but then how do they harness the energy? What are they... Once you tap it, what are you going to do? Yeah.
That's magma. I don't know. This is a real, even for Transformer science, this is a loosey-goosey one. I do like the reappearance of the space bridge. Not that it matters in this episode. Nothing happens with it.
I was shocked. I would like to see an AECOM shockwave. I'm kind of.
You did last time we saw AECOM, but he was just there for no reason.
I just wish Shockwave was in more episodes.
The other thing, this continues that trope of why isn't Starscream in second or at worst third command? How did he not know about this plan? They build a fucking space bridge and Starscream didn't know about it.
Megatron plays everything super close to the vest.
Yeah. The only way Starscream could not know about it is if Megatron just built it himself.
Maybe Starscream was on some like extended PTO.
Or the Constructicons built it and Megatron was like, don't tell Starscream. Get off on him not knowing.
I can't wait for him to get surprised.
Maybe it is like a tingle in his bottom every time he surprises Starscream.
I will say in this situation, Starscream's actually the rational one. It's like a role reversal.
I think he kind of often is the rational.
Sometimes.
It seems like it's either one or the other. Like he's a lunatic who wants to trudge down a canyon into some crystals right away. Also, we skipped over it, but that elevator thing they take out of the cave, I'm sure the reason is just because it looks cool, but Megatron and Starscream get on this energy elevator that takes them to the top, but then they fly. I'm like, you built a machine to do what you already do.
They like the idea of doing it. It's just like, well, we got this thing. We got this thing. We might as well use it.
There's a lot of holes in the earth in this episode.
I've also noticed both the Decepticons and Autobots love caverns.
Yeah.
Like you said that in the last episode, that rocket that was disguised to look like a mountain, inside it had stalactites.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you could drill from anywhere.
Well, I guess
you don't have to find a cave that's maybe marginally below sea level drill from there.
I think the conceit on that was that it's hidden.
I guess. Yeah, but then they also constructed a holographic mountain to obscure their space bridge.
That's a good point.
Couldn't they just drill it right there next to the space bridge?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, it's all fair.
Okay, we're hanging with the Autobots. A bunch of them are racing through some muddy terrain. You've got Wheeljack, Prowl, Mirage, Sunstreak, and Gears. Turns out they're actually racing in what is a semi-dried riverbed. What's the deal with that? Investigation reveals the river has been diverted by Constructicons.
I love this part we're getting ready to get to right here where we're three quarters behind Mirage. It made me, like driving down the riverbed, it made me think of Pole Position.
Yeah.
That's a nice shot.
Sega game?
Or like, it was also an Atari game.
Yeah. Oh, maybe it was. Okay, Namco.
And it made me think of like, there's a scene in 1973's Dawn of the Dead where it's one of those analog games where it's not even digital. It's like a bright background with like, you turn the wheel and your car just goes back and forth. It was very cool. Very cool. So now, Sunstreaker, what the fuck? Why is he in charge?
It is a weird group of people, and it does feel their roles do feel off, but they see the Constructicons on the other side of the river, and we see standing at the edge of the waterfall, Mixmaster has fixed Scavenger's geologic circuits, and they return to base, and our Auto Bros are gonna follow.
It's just so weird. Yeah, Sunstreaker says, okay, Autobots, move out, and I'm like, nobody would ever put him in charge of it. It just seems off. Like, Jazz is there and Prowl is there. They seem way more into the chain of command than fucking Sunstreaker, who's just an ass.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. It really stuck out to me.
I didn't even notice it, but you're completely correct. There's no precedence for Sunstreaker taking any sort of proactive stance.
Oh, God.
Also, the colors on Prowl, AECOM is known for bad coloration, but they color Prowl like Blue Streak. He's basically Blue
He's
Streak.
All gray, essentially. Mm-hmm.
By the time the Autobots get to the edge of the waterfall, the Constructicons are nowhere to be seen. But speaking of the Autobots being and seeing, Laserbeak is flying overhead, and he flies to the cave and reports the knowledge that the Autobots are onto them.
Complete with TIE fighter sound effects.
Megatron is furious. The Autobots must be offed before they can squeal on the scheme to the surface and transform and merge. Into Devastator!
It's really weird.
It was a weird call
it's
and
very
response
weird
thing.
Yeah, how they celebrate it.
Constructicons, transform and merge into Devastator!
They know what's up.
Yeah. I love Devastator, but again, I've said this before, it seems like all the episodes that he centers on are done by AECOM, and there's only three AECOM episodes in season two.
Yeah.
But at least this is the last one. God.
Is this the this is the last time AECOM is involved
in season 2.
Yeah. So they're all over action in season 3.
Yeah, but that's like 3 years away, right?
I'd have it on the spreadsheet, and we will end season 2 January of 2022.
Good God. So much will happen between now and then.
Wow.
Yeah.
It feels a long way off.
It is more than a year away. By a wide margin. It's like 18 months.
I'm trying to decide.
There's probably a 10% chance one of us will be dead by the time.
God, I hope.
Do we continue this podcast if Ryan dies?
No.
Okay, yeah, you're right. That seems like a It seems like pretty good excuse to quit.
I'm looking for any excuse to quit.
We'll continue if Caleb dies.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
We'll just bring
in
some...
That's why I hope he dies.
You know, you'll bring in Seibert. I know what's going to happen.
No, he's too knowledgeable.
It'll just be a rotation of...
Well, if Ryan dies, we get Ernie.
That's right.
That's true.
What about if Aaron dies? We're definitely not continuing because neither of us want the responsibility.
Well, good to know that I'm the irreplaceable one here.
Oh, God. Devastator, knocks all the Autobots around. This part...
He somehow manages to sneak behind
the
Autobot squad.
That doesn't make any sense.
He tosses a giant round boulder sort of near them, which causes most of them to be knocked off the cliff.
Wait. I just realized that your slight about Seibert being too knowledgeable would imply that I am not knowledgeable.
Yeah, that's the joke.
Touche.
We just bring in somebody off the street.
It just sunk into my head. All right, fuck it. Go ahead.
It's true. All these Autobots are knocked off the cliff, falling hundreds of feet to what you'd think would be their doom, but just to the ground, which is confusing also because there's water down there, and they make a big deal out of them being knocked off the summit of the waterfall, and there's no real danger.
It is also, this is the next episode, but the same thing happens into water that seems to be fatal.
Yes, and... I don't know what the fuck is up with all the waterfalls.
Well, right here, we've paused it at like 6:20, where Mirage is hanging onto a branch halfway down the cliff.
You can really see the quality of AECOM's like lines in this, and the complete lack of using a ruler, I think, really. They don't.
Well, I don't think anybody uses a ruler. That'd be hard to animate.
I don't know, but there's still some key things here. Like, I'm looking like... Fuck. Yeah, their quality is pretty piss poor.
It's also the coloring. Like, we remember on the last episode with Devastator, the subway car that looked like it was colored by colored pencil. All the boulders here, this branch he's holding onto looks like it's done with colored pencil.
Yeah. I feel like they're using models that are all a little bit off. I actually don't hate their coloration. Their colors seem to be more saturated in a way. But, yeah, their models are just not good. And just the action isn't as good. Their explosions, I think we've talked about that, aren't
their lasers, the battles in general are terrible. This part where Mirage is hanging on to this branch, he says, "I may shatter when I hit, but the Decepticons will never find my pieces." Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
what does that mean?
First of all, I think I have six questions. What? Who cares if they did? Your invisibility power still works if you're dead? Like, how does that work? Without power? It also totally blows my very generous theory of why he doesn't use invisibility all the time, which is that it's a huge power drain.
Right. Well, and this would be the time for him to use it, though. If it seems he has any chance of surviving the fall. And I should provide a little context. So he's hanging onto a branch, kind of that cliche falling off a waterfall, hanging onto a branch that was sticking off the side situation.
That's a strong branch.
This branch doesn't look particularly strong, but it's holding onto him. It eventually gives way and we presume he goes invisible on the way down.
Can we assume that this isn't really a branch? Like, considering he's like a huge robot, it'd be like he's hanging onto a whole tree.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, there's a little lake down there, and none of the robots seem to actually fall into that lake. They all fall on dry land.
Fuck.
Devastator, still at the top of the cliff, he jumps down to join the Autobots that are down there, and the battle continues at the base of the waterfall. The Autobots, again, unhurt from their fall, fire on Devastator. Seemingly no effect. No, he fires back, I-beam style, knocking him back into the rock walls.
Fucking him up.
You know, I thought that whenever Devastator first uses I-beams, I was like, that seems weird, but he does it all the time. I guess I just don't remember
it's the industrial thing. You know, like they build shit.
I-beams.
He's going to grab an I-beam.
Well done. Homonyms.
Yeah.
He also calls in this, like, the ongoing series of Earthling analog things. He calls the Autobots Mechano Ants.
I hate it.
He should call them. He should call them Auto Bugs. I'm gonna squish you like the Auto Bugs that you are.
You should write for this.
It's too late.
We're going back to the drill site. The Constructicons are hard at work penetrating the Earth's fertile womb.
Hey, take me out to dinner first.
Starscream steps over the cliff and yells some shit. Now he's all in on this plan. And that model of Starscream is very original model sheet looking. Like, it does not look contemporary at all.
It looks like the coloring books.
Yes, it does. Mirage, we're going to go outside. Mirage, who you will recall turned invisible while hanging by a branch, is still alive. He has snuck inside the facility. He has got to get to headquarters and tell them about this plan or the Earth is toast. We go back outside. You got Jazzy, Sunny, Grumpy, and Brutality are all still outside fighting Devastator. I don't know why this fight isn't over yet, but most of all, I don't know how a fully formed Devastator is still outside while half his components are in here working.
There are extra Constructicons show up all the time. We do have a cool bit here. Mirage throws a tow cable first of all, we have the shittiest version of Jazz's light and sound show that I ever did see.
There's no cool music.
No, there's no music. There's blobs of light and what seem to be radio waves, but no sound.
Yeah, it's like... Burr, 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 burr.
I don't hate it.
I fucking think it looks terrible. I just wish there was some
cool music. It's not as good as the other interpretations. Yes, that cool music would have been good.
Yeah. I have a quick aside because I forgot to mention earlier about Mixmaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The terminology of Mixmaster in G1, do you think that it predates the hip-hop term Mixmaster? Or is it... Did they take the term Mixmaster from the hip-hop stuff that was going on at the time?
I think it definitely does not predate it, well, and I think it's unrelated.
So, Ryan, there's a genre of music called hip-hop.
Saying I think hip-hop, the term came first.
I don't think so.
Oh, it was in the 70s they were doing mixing.
Yeah, but a mix master, just because hip-hop was around in the 70s doesn't mean all the terms were
I don't know when the actual term mix master originated.
I don't either. I'm getting most of that information from an episode of Drunk History about the history of scratching.
Yeah.
There is the DJ Mixmaster Mike, who was a DJ for the Beastie
Boys. In the
Boys.
90s.
That's the only reference to Mixmaster I really know of.
Anyway, I think it's completely unrelated because it's just they're just like talking about chemicals.
Do you think that they're related at all?
No.
If there's any relation, it could be hip-hop being influenced by this. This is way before hip-hop was mainstream.
There are a lot of rappers and stuff that like Transformers.
Let's never forget the Decepticon gang coming out of Brooklyn.
It's true.
Oh, wait a minute. Listen to this. There was an experimental bomber designed for a high top speed back in the 40s called the XB-42 Mixmaster, which seems to have predated all of this.
Well, it certainly does so far.
So it makes it possible that the term Mixmaster here is completely not influenced by hip hop mixmastering. Mixmaster.
I think they're all three completely independent of each other, and it's just a cool term.
I agree. Maybe
80% right. Agree with Ryan.
Yeah, I think
for once.
So there's another. Shocking. There's another use of the word mixmaster that's from the 40s. So okay. So there we go. That was enlightening to me. I don't know about our listeners, but okay. There we go.
As we said, Mirage shows back up on the scene. He chucks a grappling hook at Sunstreaker. We were just bitching about that Jazz distracts Devastator with a less than fancy light show. And while that's happening, Mirage and Sunstreaker surround and trip up Devastator with that grappling hook.
They Battle of Hoth him. Where the the snow speeders, they tie up the AT-AT walkers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Brrr.
That's a fun part of the game, I think, Rogue Squadron.
That animation of Devastator
just
falling.
Just tipping over.
It's so fucking
It made
lame.
Me think of that episode with the sun needle where Ironhide just goes, like he doesn't even move.
All right, Devastator's down. Let's get the fuck out of here. Back to Autobot headquarters. Teletran 1 confirms that this drilling operation will no doubt Shatter the earth.
Is this the longest we've ever gone before seeing Prime in an episode? We're like a third of the way in already. Over a third.
Almost half. Yeah, it's a ways in.
Yeah, but yay, Chip Chase is here. I'm always happy to see Chip. He works with Wheeljack to create the, what do they call it? The fucking Dominator discs.
Yeah, from what I understand, this is the first episode with Chip Chase where there's no Spike.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this is the only one.
Yep, I got that right.
I'll be... See?
I think I had
That's one of his eight notes.
It is not. Nice. That was just out of my ass.
Damn.
Good job, accidentally.
Yeah, I read it on the TF Wiki.
Okay, great.
This is the second ACOM episode with Chip Chase, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't in City of Steel.
It was in the Autobot run.
Right.
Yeah, this is the ACOM thing where they have him in a blue jacket.
Yeah. Well, Prowl makes the case that Devastator is going to make the job they have before them, which is stopping the Decepticons from drilling into the Earth's core, very hard. Luckily, Chip and Wheeljack just happen to have developed a Dominator disc to override Devastator circuits. All we have to do is secretly place one of these discs on each of the 9+ Constructicons, and when they form giant mode, well, you know what's going to happen, boys. He's going to be there.
Right. It certainly brings up ethical questions, but also questions of like, why not just put them on all the Decepticons if you're going to go that far?
They make the inference it only works once they get into combined mode.
Makes all the sense in the world. It's just like the Fixatron. It's just whatever.
Assemble a commando raiding party.
That is probably high in my running for my favorite Optimus order.
Can I have an answer for that, Optimus Prime? A Dominator disc to override Devastator circuits
and bring him under our control.
Devastator under Autobot control?
Sure. We secretly place one of these on each of the Constructicons. When they all join together,
zap! A Dominator discs will make Devastator ours.
Look at Wheeljack coming in trying to get some sort of like credit on this whole thing.
Tonight, Chip. Assemble a commando raiding party.
I just thought it was cool.
What happened to freedom being the right of all sentient?
This is what I'm saying. It brings up a lot of ethical questions.
It's like Prime is interested in some slaves. Yep.
Back to the Falls, which you'd think would be guarded since the previous group of Autobots got away and were definitely not going to be silent about it. But whatever, everybody's here. Ironhide freezes the falls, which stops the flow of water that was cooling the drill.
All the way to the ocean, Ryan.
So I'm even leaving that aside, like freezing there's no way you could freeze that river. Do you know how much liquid nitrogen that would take?
How much?
Well, how
many DeVitos would that take?
in DeVito joules. they would take, well, for example, it takes a half gallon of liquid nitrogen to make an equal amount of ice cream. So, I don't know, gallons?
That's a lot of DeVitos.
DeVito units of cooling.
DVUs.
How much does DeVito weigh?
7,500 pounds.
What he does? That's incredible.
He's efficient the way
I bet DeVito weighs probably, considering his height, probably weighs a while.
I would say 200 pounds probably.
No.
Look it up.
No, I weigh.
You think that's going to be on the internet?
You think it weighs more than that?
No, he's not less.
I think he weighs under 200.
I think he weighs around 160 pounds.
No way. I weigh 140 pounds.
But yeah, got him by inches.
Yeah, you got him by quite a bit.
We have to look it up.
You have DeVito by like at least 0.25 DeVitos. What?
Just look up how much does any DeVito weigh. They have height and weight.
I can't imagine a man under 5 feet weighing more than 200 pounds unless he's morbidly obese.
He is.
He's not morbidly obese.
How much
obese.
Medically he is.
No, he's a little
How
man.
Much does Danny DeVito weigh?
Here is information from Wikibio.
176 pounds.
All right.
I can't believe this is available.
Why wouldn't it be? He's an actor.
He's 4'11".
Yeah. 176 pounds.
That was pretty close.
No, you weren't.
Yeah, no.
That's 25 pounds off.
Yeah.
You were...
Caleb was like 13 pounds
off. You said
off.
Over 200.
Well, by Price of Right rules, you were right. You win.
$1.
Price is Right.
$1, Bob. All right, so, yeah.
First time I've ever been wrong.
But you got to do something to make this jacked up.
this drill jacked up. And yeah,
and we don't know the technology. We don't know that he's not dealing in liquid nitrogen. He's dealing in Cybertronian technology. Yeah. So
pretty sure they call it liquid nitrogen in another episode. I mean, it's not a deal breaker. It's just ridiculous.
I get it. So the impossible way of preventing the drill from functioning is preventing the impossible drill from functioning.
Yeah. It's just, here's the thing. Here's the whole conceit that you don't seem to care about, that I care about, is you're already, like in science fiction and in fantasy, you have big conceits. The big conceit here is there are alien robots that are millions of years old. So every time you build another conceit that's impossible on top of it, you reach a tipping point where, like in the interview with Flint Dilley, he said, it's like, oh God, a Voltrenic Galaxeter, where it's just like, okay, now we've reached a point where I can no longer suspend my disbelief.
Well, so
even if you're an 8-year-old kid.
That's your personal tipping point.
Yeah. Okay. What else do I have to say except my personal opinion?
But you have to put it in the context of who the actual audience is.
I'm saying watching it, and we only are able... Yes, it's a kid's show, but how else am I supposed to review it?
Oh, I'm not mad at you.
No, we're just saying...
Your elevated levels of anger.
I'm just saying every time something stupid happens, it pisses me off more.
I think you're just mad because it's an ACOM episode.
I am. That's not helping. That's certainly... We're already at an 8 on my irritation scale.
Okay, fair enough. You're already coming in hot.
Yes.
Yes. Just like this drill bit.
I will accept your anger. And I will validate your emotions.
I like... That was funny, Aaron.
Thanks for listening.
Sorry, I didn't listen at all.
He's coming in hot like this drill bit.
Thanks for telling me again.
Yep.
The Constructicons recognize the problem immediately, and are they going to take that same elevator?
Take it in a weird way.
I'm surprised they didn't just turn into Devastator and fly through the ceiling of the cave, since that happens at least later. Twice later.
I'm going to hand it to Devastator. He's a fucking badass. All right, so problems. Problems with the drill. It's getting fucked.
I don't know if I'm not going.
It's breaking down.
Why? What the fuck is happening?
I don't know, man.
For some reason, this is
the
not
lack of running water is actually also causing your computer to not function.
That's
correctly.
True. Let me.
Did somebody stop the river flowing to your laptop? Oh, I did have the note. I guess I was so angry at the time, but I did put the note. It's a pretty solid idea, and I'm willing to forgive the physics. Yeah, they all turn into vehicle mode and get on the elevator. Though the elevator looks weird, it doesn't look like a day before. It appears that there's no platform because they come from bottom up. It just looks like they float through the sky.
They floated on the first part of it, too, like Starscream and Megatron.
But there
floated
was a
as well.
Platform, though.
But there wasn't on the first one. There was no platform.
Oh, there was never
it
a wasn't, platform.
But it just,
then,
yeah, it
but
just
then
looks
later on when they did it again, there was a platform. And now there's not a platform the third time. So it's like sometimes there's a platform and sometimes there's not a platform.
Make your fucking mind up.
Yeah, make your fucking mind up, ACOM.
So the Constructicons, they've taken the elevator. They're at the surface. What's going on? The Autobots have all taken position to attach these Dominator discs to each of the
Constructicons. They're just hiding in holes.
One by one, they apply the discs, with the most stylish application being awarded to Jazz for his skipped stone
It was
technique.
Pretty cool. Yeah, he skips it off the ground because he's got to be extra.
But the thing is, he could have just...
Tapped it on?
He just could have tapped it on. The guy drives right by him, but he lets him drive by and then does some flares.
So heads up, dummy!
He's really peacocking.
I sounded more like Red Fox.
I will say...
Because you said dummy.
It's true, yeah.
I will say, I'm impressed with the Autobots' ability here to actually get a plan in place and do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good plan.
They actually...
And they execute.
Yeah.
This is actually where we're getting ready to... Well,
I'm just glad
we'll get there.
Prime could bend his morals to do this plan. Yeah.
It's true.
Prime is gathering up the Autobots. He drops a
cage,
sort of a
shark cage.
To collect them and bring them back up. And as they rise back up to the top of the cliffs to get out of there, we see a scope sighted on the Autobots. Is this their end? We'll know more.
go to commercial.
After the break.
I will say... That Prime probably could get behind this plan because I do the same thing at work. Like, it wasn't his idea. It was someone else's idea. It was Chip's idea. So if there's any shit that happens, he can just blame Chip Chase for it.
Right. I empowered you, Chip, and Wheeljack.
This was your idea.
To do this.
But this conceit of the idea is I'm making a slave.
Perfect.
Just blame Chip.
Okay. long history of that working.
That's
out.
Like that's some real Nazi shit there. It's like I was following orders.
I like how I just said that I do that at work.
Yeah, I caught that too.
I don't really do that at work.
we're editing
good,
that out.
Good walk back. Okay, yeah. So
we're back from the break. Starscream is about to snipe the Autobots, but Megatron steps in. Starscream accuses him of being a traitor.
Yeah, a real role reversal.
Immediately. But Megatron has a plan. He seems to be, somehow...
It doesn't make any sense.
He's aware of the Autobots' plan to take over Devastator.
I have a lot to say. I fucking hate that. Like, that's a cheat. That's a straight-up cheat. There's no way he would be aware of that. And it really, like, takes... That's just
there
lazy...
There are ways he could be aware of it, but they did not show those ways.
Why kill these guys now when we can kill them all?
Except...
Later.
Except maybe one more of them.
That's another point I had, like...
Just fucking kill them now!
It doesn't make sense. Yeah, kill them now.
And you got Optimus Prime.
They shouldn't even have this whole sequence in here, but I guess there are
But to your point, Ryan,
they needed
though,
some foreshadowing.
These are two different issues.
Issue one, how could he know? They've shown a Decepticon tape character sneaking into Autobot headquarters so many times. They could have just had a brief one shot of while they're talking about that. You just flash to Laserbeak's head watching that, and that issue would be solved.
Yeah, it's impossible for him to just deduce it.
Right.
Also, I like how they call it, he says, gain control of a Devastator. It's weird.
Well, they do have at least 9. If all you need are 12.
Need to make a tiny Devastator out of 3.
I will say kudos, though, to Optimus Prime having a cool like thing in his trailer that can like lower and raise Autobots.
Yeah, it's a shark cage.
It would be nice if he could have used that earlier in the episode. It's like every time that the Autobots...
Oh, they jump down the cliff.
Every time, it's like a different method.
Well, we did get to see... That was a Jazz still does have that grappling hook, but as we saw, Mirage has it too. But right, Jazz is the only one we've seen consistently use it.
Not such a special... ability after all. Megatron, again, he stops Starscream from assassinating the Autobots because his rationale is that there's an opportunity to destroy all the Autobots instead of just 6 of them. So the Decepticons position themselves from afar on a mountaintop, and they're firing right into the incoming grill of the Autobot forces. Megatron sends in his troops, first the Seekers, then the Constructicons, who form Devastator. Wheeljack and Chip Chase unleash their secret technology to take control of Devastator.
I might point out the river is still frozen whenever all this happens. And God, just this battle, it's so bad. The lasers are bad. The smoke is bad. Everybody's movements are terrible. It just, look at that.
It's not worth it to have a smoother frame rate if you don't do anything with it. It's not a benefit.
So
ACOM should not even just deal with. They just should still have shit animation.
It's just more shitty drawings.
Yeah, and I would say that like normally I'd complain about the convoluted nature of Megatron's plan here, because why not just take off the discs and have Devastator pretend to be under his control, under the Autobot's control?
Yeah.
My only conceit to that is maybe Devastator's too dumb to yes and.
You start to feel for the Constructicons.
I didn't
really.
Nah,
I did at the end.
They're just being pushed and pulled between these two manipulative forces. And then at the end, I feel like there is an emotional moment where they're basically sacrificing themselves. But
yeah, I didn't care. I was so checked out by that point.
Devastator turns his attention to the Decepticons. He starts smashing the Seekers, firing on the retreating foes. Megatron and his cronies take refuge in a cave, which Devastator fires on, creating a cave-in, thus imprisoning the Decepticons.
It's barely worth mentioning, but the changeable size of Devastator in this is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. I hate how silly the animation is when he's slapping
the Seekers away where they just tumble.
just cartwheeling away in the sky.
Ooh-wee. So the Decepticons are sealed in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now the falls are working again, but that's an animation error.
Some Autobots want to just finish off the Decepticons right now, but Prime's like, nah, we're good. The Decepticons, they can't do anything. Let's go home and take a break, which is what they do.
God. Also, okay, so here we're back with Megatron and Starscream is his name.
I like him. I like how he's sitting there.
He does. He looks like he's pouting.
He is definitely in timeout.
He's been put in the corner.
So Megatron says, I've stored enough water to cool the drill for the final push to the Earth's core. So what the fuck did you even come out of the cave for?
Where was that water earlier?
Like, once it froze, just use that water.
Right.
I think Megatron is probably actually an Autobot.
Oh, that'd be a cool twist. Like,
like a double agent.
Like when Captain America turns out to be a Hydra agent for 40 fucking years.
Really? That fucking happened in the comics?
Yeah, it happened. I mean, Captain America's been a bunch of different people, but like he's mostly Steve Rogers, but I don't think right now he is. I think Steve is dead right now.
That's far
I'm
out.
I'm not sure. I haven't kept up with Captain America. Don't at me.
Okay, interesting. Go ahead.
Megatron is updating Starscream on the scheme. Look, we're just letting the Autobots think they have control over Devastator. I mean, they do have control, but I have a remote that will allow me to regain control. Why didn't I tell you about my plan? Because you're a real Nicolas Cage, Starscream. You had the goods, but you haven't delivered since leaving Las Vegas.
Wow. Mom and Dad was pretty good. Also, I like Crazy Nick Cage.
I do, too.
Why didn't you tell me?
I wanted you to believe the battle was real. You're such a rotten actor, you couldn't fool a Sartonian simpleton.
I want to know what a Sartonian... I wrote down, Sartonian simpleton?
It seems like a slur. Oh! He says... Megatron says... I'll turn a Devastator back under our control when they least expect it. Here's an idea. In the base.
Yeah.
Sure.
They're in the Autobot base right now.
Mm-hmm. Seems to me that Megatron is a Sartonian simpleton for not thinking of that in the first place.
Yeah, he could have killed all 7 Autobots right there.
Mm-hmm. Why kill 6 when you can kill 7? After Megatron says that they still have enough water, I look down at this episode's time and I was like 8 fucking minutes are left. And I had to get up and walk around for a while.
Let's push through this then.
We can do this. As we referred to, Megatron has enough water to continue to cool the drill for the final thrust. And if shit goes bad, we got the space bridge. The drill is going deeper. The earth cracks all around it. We go back to Autobot headquarters.
It's a weird scene.
It is very strange to see the Constructicons. Hook is helping repair the Autobots. And even though they're under Autobot control, they still have the ability to sass.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's like fixing jazz somehow.
Yeah. There's no time to savor this moment as the cracks in the ground are happening all around them. And that's the indication that actually the Decepticons have succeeded in getting their fracking operation back up and running. This is a terrible episode. I can't.
Yeah, man.
I don't like AECOM either. I'm on board. I liked the ones that were wacky. Yeah. This one isn't wacky.
It's not wacky enough for me to appreciate the animation
mm-hmm.
for being shit. All right, go ahead. Let's get this over with.
Let's power through to the end of this goddamn garbage.
The Autobots plus Devastator are going back to the caves. Devastator opens it up with his I-beams. Just as they approach the drill for destruction, Megatron flips his switch and commands Devastator to destroy the Autobots instead. Devastator gets right at it. He ends up trapping Chip in a cavern. And at this point, we go to commercial. Are the Autobots finished? Back from commercial, Devastator closes in on the Autobots to finish the job. The drilling operation is starting to become unstable. There's more steaming cracks in the ground. The caverns are falling in. Wheeljack tries to reach...
This fucking doofus Wheeljack. Chip warns him. He does it. He tries to get Devastator back under control anyway. And mm-hmm. he's like, oh, what you said was going to happen happened. And Devastator goes out of control.
With all of the different forces trying to control Devastator, it's causing his brain circuits to scramble. He picks up Starscream, throws him into the drill controls, which overloads the controls. He continues attacking both Autobots and Decepticons. The Decepticons realize their plan is hosed. It's time to retreat to the space bridge, but Devastator gives chase, flying through the ceiling of the cavern and crashing through the space bridge.
Anyway,
this time the Decepticons do decide to fly through the portal mm-hmm. to the ground level. But Devastator flies through the ceiling of the cave and just busts through the space bridge.
I know it's not very cinematic, but why couldn't they have just, I don't know, well, we're not even there yet, but why not just shut off the power to the drill?
Because it's lost control.
Presumably, if it doesn't have power, it wouldn't keep going.
They didn't build a switch.
If there was a problem with the large Hadron Collider. Is that how you pronounce it?
Large Hadron, Hadron Collider.
Large, if there was a problem with the Large Hadron Collider, could you just unplug it?
You could just pull the mains power switch, like the breaker.
And with doing that, I mean, I guess it also depends on the forces like, that you're dealing with. If that drill going so hard and so strong, and if you were to just do that, that would be problematic unto itself.
I don't see why.
Some things need to be slowed down.
Powered down.
Only if you're worried about destroying the drill.
Right. But that might be explosive unto itself.
I mean, we're already in speculative territory where drills will explode the planet. It's fucking...
I wish I had a picture of Caleb's face right now. Top, the Decepticons realize they're deep-fried fucked along with everything on this planet. But wait, what if I told you that maybe the Autobots and Decepticons could team up?
I do like that.
They could let Chip and Wheeljack both... access both Devastator controllers and do some science shit and regain control of Devastator. You'd slap me in the face if I told you something like that. Ah! But a matter of fact, that is what happened. As soon as Devastator regained his senses, Megatron commanded him to get downstairs, get back to work, fix the drill, save our ass.
It was a little out of place and silly, but I did kind of like where Scavenger was like, it's been an honor to serve with you.
That's what we were talking about earlier.
I feel emotional.
I liked that part. Yeah. I guess I forgot about it.
The Constructicons have what's basically a very tender go-team moment.
Yeah. Look, guys, if we don't make it, it's been great being part of the team.
Hey, we're not scrap iron yet, so don't get drippy. Now, let's transform!
It made me think of the scene in Titanic with the musicians.
All right, so...
Anyway, so yeah, Devastator flies into the drill, stop the drill. Why you couldn't just smash it at the top, I don't know. Why you have to go all the way down there doesn't make sense.
Well, he sure does, though. He goes down there and fucking deals with it.
Yeah, with 1 second left.
1 second.
He got down there quick.
He did. 4,000 miles. Yeah.
How many DeVitos?
4.5 quadrillion.
Yeah.
It's very self-sacrificial. It is kind of a tender moment. So Devastator jumps down in the hole to try, again, I don't know why you wouldn't just smash the drill.
Yep.
Seems like that would do the same thing. But they dive down towards the center of the Earth, get underneath the drill, and stop it from penetrating the core.
Yeah.
1 single second.
1 second.
Before... it was to happen. Devastator saves the day, stops the drill, emerges from the core, blindly believing. But while all that was happening, I guess the Decepticons decided the plan wasn't going to work, and they took off.
Where are you going?
Yeah, I mean, what? Unless it's out of Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah. Fucking idiots.
Devastator emerges from the core. He blindly believes that Megatron simply withdrew to fight another day.
Mm-hmm.
But so Devastator just takes off, crashing through the cave ceiling again.
He does not like doors.
And Chip is sad because he thought maybe there was a chance that the Constructicons could join the Autobots.
Can you play that thing where Prime, the last line Prime says to Chip?
What's the matter, Chip?
I guess I was hoping Devastator might join the Autobots for good, but that's probably just a dumb old dream.
Hang on to your dreams, Chip. The future is built on dreams. Hang on.
That line, the future's built on dreams, were Peter Cullen's words of encouragement to a young fan of Optimus in real life who was dying of a terminal illness.
Holy shit.
And every time he tells that story, he gets choked up.
Yeah.
So
that's amazing.
And you're right, Caleb. I had that note down here. Fun fact, it's the only episode of the original series which features Chip without Spike.
Cool.
That was a very, for Office fans out there, Dwight Schrute moment that Devastator just had. They said, Megatron's off. Saving his own hide, and he goes, wrong!
Wrong! He withdrew to fight Autobots another day! You haven't heard the last of Megatron!
Ryan, I'm sure there's a lot wrong with this entire sequence. Do you have any details on that?
What do you mean?
The sequence of saving the Earth?
Well, yeah, I think we covered it.
The heat of the core, he'd probably melt before he even got close.
All of that.
Drill wouldn't destroy the core. We covered that. Would Devastator melt before getting close? The drill, would it impale him?
Let that go because presuming Devastator and the drill are made out of a heretofore unknown heretofore unknown metal that
children
is...
Children watch this.
Stop it! God damn it.
Well, that's the end of the episode.
Fucking thank God.
Yeah. All right.
We're here.
Bye, guys.
See ya. Nice seeing you.
Wait. Oh, there's more. That's right.
This episode was written by Dennis Marks. The first episode we've come across for him. American writer, actor, and magician.
Ooh.
He wrote two Transformers episodes. This and the Golden Lagoon.
I love the Golden Lagoon. That should be an award.
But he wrote on many other animated series, including Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Incredible Hulk, Flintstone Kids, Ninja Turtles, Tom and Jerry Kids, Batman the Animated Series. His career goes back to the early 60s, where he wrote for Jackie Gleason variety shows and 39 episodes of the Beatles animated television series, which was a show about the Beatles on Saturday mornings from 1965.
Be weird if it was about the monkeys.
Yeah. Each episode had the name of a Beatles song, and the story was based on the lyrics of that song, and it was the first weekly television series to feature animated versions of real living people. And he's dead, January 2006.
73 of pancreatic cancer.
Wow.
I have a bunch about him. It's
RIP deviations.
There are just some minor deviations, but like Aaron has alluded to with the writer, there's a far more fascinating story with the writer this episode, Dennis Marks. So way back in 1982, Knickerbocker Toys created a toy line called Mysterians, inspired by a small keychain that transformed into a train and a robot. The company executive is on a trip to Japan found this, and this may be the earliest attempt to bring transforming robots to the United States. Knickerbocker wanted to do a comic pack-in with the toy and approached Marvel editor-in-chief Jim Shooter, who I'm sure everybody knows was the editor-in-chief of Marvel and the man in charge of Transformers comic, along with Bob Budiansky. So the writer of this episode, Dennis Marks, was also involved in this project with Knickerbocker and had a huge contempt for the comics industry in general, and Jim Shooter in particular completely rewrote the premises for the book that Jim Shooter had laid out with heavy focus on kid-supporting characters and a goofy dog, which is gross. This is all moot because the same day Mysterians was advertised, Knickerbocker was acquired by Hasbro and the whole project was canceled. When Hasbro wanted to develop their own Transforming Robot franchise, Shooter revised this earlier concept. Four figures from the Mysterians toy line, Jeepar, Blazar, Truckar, and Speedar, became Brawn, Gears, Huffer, and Windcharger, respectively. And these were released by Takara in their Microchange toy line in 83, but that wasn't their point of origin. It was from this Knickerbocker Toys. The characters that become Gears, Brawn, and Huffer all have an M logo sculpted on their bodies. A lot of people presume this stood for Microchange, but it's a completely different style than the Microchange brand and much closer to the Mysterians M logo.
Who was manufacturing those toys?
I don't know for sure because it was the Toy Expo in Japan that Knickerbocker found those, so I don't have the name of the company that was producing them, unless it was just called Mysterians. I don't know. I don't have that information. It's complicated. Yeah, it's just interesting that this writer had big beef with Jim Shooter and hated the comics in general.
No kidding. That's fun. Fun.
He was
fun
an older knowledge. Guy, so maybe he just like, funny books! Sounds...
communist!
Yeah, it sounds like Reds.
In the real world.
Okay, The Core aired October 29th, 1985. The American Top 40 this week was Stevie Wonder's Part-Time Lover, which we covered. Uh-huh. So I picked a number one hit from the week ending April 13th, 1985, We Are the World.
Oh, huge.
By the one-off supergroup USA for Africa. Yeah, it was everywhere. You couldn't...
not get away from it. So
Harry Belafonte, if you don't know, created the idea for a charity song for the United Support of Artists for Africa, a nonprofit that would provide hunger relief in Africa, Ethiopia in particular. There was a huge... drought and in Ethiopia from like 82 to 86, and so this song was released in March of 1985 and became the fastest selling American pop single in history, the first to go multi-platinum, which it went quadruple platinum. It raised $63 million for humanitarian aid in Africa, which is $150 million today. Eddie Murphy was asked to participate on the album but declined, as he was too busy recording everybody's favorite, Party All the Time.
I love that song.
I do like that song.
I do too, but nobody knows it. Like,
yes,
it's not
do.
A I don't feel I feel like if you ask 20 people, 5 would know that song.
That's pretty good.
Rick James produced that.
All right. So more than 45 of America's top musicians participated in the recording. Just a couple: Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, Paul Simon, Kenny Rogers, Billy Joel, Michael Jackson being the major one, because it was written by Michael Jackson and written by Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson. Yep.
I did not have any idea you would talk about this. So the Belafonte.
Yeah, we've got a second.
We're
Belafonte
bookending this thing really
well.
Nicely.
That's true. Yeah. Wow, awesome. That's amazing. The chorus was weird. Like, there were a few standouts. Dan Aykroyd is a weird one that was in there, and then a whole mess of Jacksons. Michael Jackson took this super seriously, and as of the producers, there was a sign over the entrance to the recording studio that said, "Check your egos at the door."
Nice.
I tried to find it. I couldn't find it. I'll have to find it to post before we do this. But there's a video of Michael Jackson taking Huey Lewis aside because I guess he felt he wasn't taking it seriously enough and trying to tell him how this part of the song is supposed to go. And there's a video when they're recording it where Michael Jackson's behind Huey Lewis. And as Huey Lewis sings the line, Michael goes, it's just a look of disgust that comes over his face. Michael Jackson, a bit of a perfectionist, as we know, because he was beaten into being a good singer.
Yes, yep.
So
if you're going to manage an effort like that, you have to make somebody's got to be in charge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you got to put a rule like check your ego. Like, you don't have to be a part of this.
Right.
See ya.
Michael Jackson.
Get out.
Michael Jackson's going to be the person that can probably get away with that because he's
right. He was the biggest star in the world.
Yeah. Yep. That was a song. Number one at the box office was Death Wish 3, which we covered back in episode 127. So I picked a number one from June 30th, Pale Rider. Which probably you know, Caleb.
I do.
A mysterious preacher, Clint Eastwood, protects a humble prospecting village from a greedy mining company trying to encroach on their land.
Yep.
This was, again...
He kind of does, in a way.
I haven't seen it.
It's a great movie. It's a really good... It's a really interesting one.
It's one of the Eastwood's Nameless Drifter, Man With No Name movies.
Yeah, but it's an interesting one that it's one of the ones... It's one of the last ones he did, because this one was in the 80s.
Yeah, this was his first Western since Outlaw Josie Wales in 76.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
And then his last prior to Unforgiven in 92. Yeah,
this was technically one of his last of that canon. It's a good.
I didn't even know that was. I didn't even know there was another movie to that canon outside
the Dollars trilogy.
Well, yeah, those stand alone as the spaghetti westerns. This isn't really a spaghetti western, but it's Unforgiven excluded. It has to do with that Pale Rider, and actually, they figure out who he is later on in the movie.
Do you? It says here it's not obvious, but there are hints that Eastwood character is a specter.
He is. It's not even a hint. He's definitely a specter. There's some sort of character earlier on in the movie that is killed by some bad guys in town, and the town lets it happen because they're cowards. So the Pale Rider. So he comes back as a specter, basically teaches the town. He kills the bad guys, but he teaches the town a fucking lesson.
Can everybody see him? Is this?
They don't. He comes back as a different person.
But he is manifesting real physical interaction.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. He's a character, and they all latch on to him because he's a tough guy that can solve their problems. Mm-hmm. The difference is he makes the town do certain things that kind of expose their
makes them acknowledge their weakness.
Yeah, and pay for it. Mm-hmm. He basically convinces
Sounds
the
like
town to, like, he says, we're going to paint the town red.
Oh, that's where
and
that
And he
comes
makes
from.
Them all paint all of their buildings red.
Going to paint your wagon.
He makes them look, he exposes them as fools and cowards.
So basically, I don't know if you guys have seen this movie, but this sounds like the movie The Wraith was remade from this.
Could be.
It's a movie with Charlie Sheen who dies, is murdered, and he comes back as a mysterious car driving specter.
I didn't realize Pale Rider was that late, made that late.
85.
That's interesting.
It was made $41 million on a $6.9 million budget, highest grossing Western of the 80s.
It's a good one.
In an audio interview, Clint Eastwood says it's an out-and-out ghost. And
yeah,
obviously the title is a reference to the Book of Revelation. Fun facts from this week in history. I feel like some of these are becoming increasingly less fun and just tragic. In a reversal of a previous statement, the Pentagon said the military will automatically dismiss anyone who acknowledges in an AIDS screening process that they have used drugs or had homosexual contact. It was reported in the New York Times that Americans are saving a smaller portion of their income than at any time during the 1950s. The savings rate plummeted to 2.9%, and then in September was even lower at 1.9%, which I feel like was just a real interesting look into the mid-80s about how everybody thought everybody was getting rich.
Yeah, there are trend curves that are very stark in terms of American productivity and American wages. And right around, I want to say, 73, 74, the gap between productivity and wages. Like, mm-hmm. Productivity still does great. We get more and more productive. We get more efficient. We get better. But wages just basically, they don't flatten, but they do not keep pace with productivity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's still happening today. The gap between workers and the profits widen larger and larger.
Rise up, Hamilton.
You cannot invoke that film, that fucking thing. God, sorry to be such a bummer. Anyway, that was it. That was all. Down with capitalism. Fucking
rate,
terrible.
Rate scheme rate.
Awful.
I think I put, like, actually...
probably a 3, maybe a 2.
Why wouldn't they have a laser drill?
Why would they do... I mean, we've already postulated that their scheme is bad in the first place. They should do it on another planet.
Even if their scheme worked, fucking... it shouldn't work. Even if they could have a 4,000-mile drill
it
or
failed,
put bits on top of bits.
If they would have successfully drilled to the core, they would have failed anyway.
Because the drill bit would have just melted.
Or just the whole thing would collapse upon itself.
Yeah, it's a horrible scheme. It's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Starscream even.
They had no plan to actually succeed. They only had a plan to drill to the center of the Earth. Yes. What you do once you get there, I know.
Terrible. I will say the Autobot scheme was really good.
That was the best Autobot, the most cohesive Autobot scheme I've
seen. Yeah.
So it's like a role reversal. Like,
despite its questionable ethics.
Sure.
Well, that's what pissed me off so much is just the writing cheat of having a Megatron just know that what they're doing.
And they didn't have to cheat it. They could have uncheated that. Take some of those extra frames that you use and put Laserbeak in
Or just have it like in the G.I. Joe movie, just someone off camera say, Laserbeak, solve!
Yeah. He's in a coma. Yeah,
yes.
Terrible scheme.
That's it.
What about iconic moment?
Oh, yeah, I didn't really have one for this, except just, again, I always like seeing foes work together.
I think the iconic moment that caught me off guard was when one of the Constructicons was, like, you know, getting all sentimental.
I think it was Scavenger. Yeah.
That actually was nice.
It was nice.
I've not seen a Decepticon behave like that before and probably won't see it again.
The acting was good.
There's some interesting things that happen with the Constructicons later on as well. As characters, like, they have some pretty interesting stories.
Good.
I just wrote down Jazz skipping his Dominator task on the Scavenger.
That's a cool trick.
Who could forget it? Next time on the Autobot Decepticast.
We'll take a trip to Toei Town and watch the Insecticons fatten up and meet a couple groovy new characters.
Hey, Daddy-O, take us out.
If you'd like to support us, you can do it one of two ways, via Patreon or through some merch at our store. And I'd argue if you're on Patreon, don't buy the merch at our store.
Don't bother.
You've done enough.
Just be like everybody else and don't.
Yeah, you're better off actually joining Patreon to get the merch.
It's true.
It's a better deal.
It is a better deal. Just do that.
Yeah, I like it. But other than that, you can continue to listen. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and TuneIn. Apple Podcast users, leave a review and update that review as often as you'd like.
Don't be as creepy.
Well, no, I say be creepier.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. That was fine. It was fun.
Follow us on our social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all of them at APODDcast, and the web presence, autopoddecepticast.com. All right. Good episode.
Hey, bye, bye, bye. Hey, calm. Never again.
I had a panicky moment where I was like, did I hit the record button?
Oh, fuck. Every time,
we can.
I just figure we could go ahead and get it out of the way.
You have it? Okay. Yep. Well, why don't you do it then, Ryan?
Transformers Reanimated, Issue 13, Food Court Fury. The Insecticons' never-ending thirst for Energon brings them to a local mall in Portland, Oregon. Will the evil Insecticons be able to extract the energy they desperately need from this hub of human commerce? Or will Bumblebee, a lone Autobot, be able to put an end to their terror? Find out in this all-new G1 adventure, Food Court Fury. Available now for free at TransformersReanimated.com. Cover art by Ryan Jett from the Autopod Decepticast.
One take.
Excellent job.
That's, they call me One Take Jet.
That's what West calls you?
Two pump jet.
I like Two Jerk Jet better.
I'd call him Two Jack Jeff. Jeff? Two Jack Jet.
I like Jeff.
Two Jack Jeff.
Brew Cells is the sponsor of Autopod Decepticast. Yes.